God is spirit, and he invites us to worship him in spirit and in truth. The life, death, and resurrection of Jesus has made a way for us to know God personally and to make him known to the world. And we who know Jesus now make our home together as a spiritual people. We grow together as a spiritual family, and we invite others to worship God in this spiritual house.
Well, good morning, Mosaic. How are you guys today? My name's Dave. I'm one of the pastors here, and I am so glad that we get to spend this morning and this afternoon, as we're halfway through, together. And I can't think of a better way than to come together as the people of God, celebrating God himself and his presence amongst us. And so what a great place to be. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but we do have a simultaneous translation at the 1117 gathering. So if you happen to know somebody who is a Spanish speaker, this is the place where they can be, all right? So let's go out there, and anytime we bump into anybody who happens to be a Spanish speaker, hey, they can come here, and this is translated simultaneously, so awesome place. If you have your Bible with you, go ahead and open up to 1 Peter chapter 2. And if you're using one of Mosaic's Bibles, that's page 1117. If you have your own, make your way there. If you're using a Bible app, you can go to 1 Peter 2 and open up the ESV version. That's where we are going to be. And as you're headed there, if you're just joining us, this is where we've been. If you're coming back from vacation, you've been around Mosaic a while, and you're just coming back, like this is just a recap. Like, we finished the book of 1 Peter. You're like, I'm pretty sure we were past chapter 2 last time I was here. We finished it a couple weeks ago, and a phenomenal series, and we learned a ton of stuff. I would encourage you to go to our webpage, thisismosaic.org, and go to the messages, click on the 1 Peter link, and if you missed anything, they're all there, or you weren't here for any of those. Awesome series. And sandwiched right in the middle of this book was this phenomenal verse that really has the fuel that is kind of propelling this series that we're in. Right now, called This Spiritual House. Specifically, we're going to look at 1 Peter 2 and look at verse 5. And this is where Peter mentioned to some early followers of Jesus who were scattered all over lands where it wasn't advantageous for them to follow Jesus. And so they're being persecuted, life's hard for them, getting increasingly hard. And then Peter launches out this verse and paints this picture of something that is happening. It's not necessarily something that they need to believe now, but rather to take what is happening right in front of them and understand this is something God is orchestrating right in their midst. So let's go ahead and head to 1 Peter. I'm going to jump in at verse 4 just to bring a little bit of context, and then we'll go into verse 5. It says this, as you come to him, speaking of Jesus, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God chosen and precious. You yourselves, here's the verse, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. So here we have these early followers, and they're being persecuted. Life is hard for them. It's getting harder. And so then they get this letter, and it talks about them being built up into a spiritual house. Now, I don't know about you, but if I slot myself into that story, I don't know that I would necessarily feel like I'm being built up into anything. Like, they're being torn down rather than being built up. And so in situations like that, when life is hard, isn't necessarily flowing like we would like it to, in situations like this, if I slot myself in the story, what I need to do is to go back to what I already know to be true and right and good, the promises that Jesus has already offered up. And then I can live in that space, and I can remember what he has already revealed about himself, and then rightly apply that truth to the situation that I find myself in. And then it begins to make sense. Then it begins to come together for me. And so if I'm in that story, I'm an early follower under persecution. Being a follower of Jesus is not so advantageous. Everywhere I turn, it seems like I'm getting hit relationally, financially, spiritually. It's not coming together. That's a space where I go, and I would want to remember some of those previous promises. And I know myself well enough that it would be, for me, I would go back to like what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16. I would lead others to do the same. So let's flip to the left, Matthew chapter 16. And let's look at some of the words of Jesus and what he promised us. And that in a space of difficulty, coming back to this reality that how this could offer us freedom and life and hope, knowing that what he said is actually happening is going to happen. So verse 13 says this in Matthew 16, verse 13. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" So he adopted this name, Son of Man, for himself. It comes out of Daniel, referencing the coming of the Messiah. And so he says, who are people saying that I am? And they said, verse 14, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. So all over the map, all over the map. Verse 15, he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" That's a big question. That's one that is even one that we ought to consider for ourselves today. Who do we say that Jesus is? Is he who he said he is? Did he do what he said he would do? Where are we at with that? Who is Jesus? And then look at what happens next. Simon Peter, always chiming in, always has something to say. He replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, I could imagine in that space, they probably got real quiet. They're like, I mean, we've been talking about this. He just said it. Yeah, yeah. And then look at what Jesus says next. Jesus answered, verse 17, answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter," name change, Petros, rock, man, you, name change right there. "And on this rock, on this confession that you just made about who I am, I, Jesus, will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." Shall not prevail against it. Could you imagine traveling with Jesus and you're in these spaces where you have seen him? He's interacted with the religious leaders. He has shared with them who he is and what he came to accomplish. He has taught and preached and loved and served and performed miracles. And all of this, you get to see that. And then now you're walking through the desert. It's hot. The disciples are there. You're just kind of hanging out with Jesus. Turns to them and he's like, "Hey, who do people say that I am?" And they rattle off a list of names. And he's like, "Okay, well, who do you say that I am?" And then, "Oh, well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God." And then he says, "That's right. That's right. And here's what's going to happen now," right? That confession that you just made, Peter, "I will build my church, my ecclesia, a local gathering, people coming together to make Jesus known, to make me known in the world. And that's going to come. I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Nothing that the enemy has is going to slow this down. He can't touch this. What I'm rolling out is going to be, it's going to be epic. It's going to change the world. Everything changes from right here. I will build my church." This is what he's rolling out. Back to 1 Peter now. Back to 1 Peter where he says, "I will build you into this spiritual house." It's exactly what Jesus said would happen. It's happening. He's building them up. What God started through the life and death and burial and resurrection and ascension of Jesus is actually taking place. He is building them up. in these little pockets called these spiritual houses, these little pockets of these gatherings of people, these little stones, and he's gathering them in countrysides where he's like this little stone and that little stone, and he puts them together to then get to know him better, get to know each other better, and then make the purposes of God known in that place. And then it's happening in little towns where stones are coming together, and he's building them up into a spiritual house so that the manifold wisdom of God would be made known there. And then in cities like you and I are in right now, cities where he gathers together you and you and you and me, and he raises us up to be a spiritual house, to be a local gathering of people, to make the plans and purposes of God known in here and out there. It's happening. It's going on. It's the story of God unfolding, his plan of redemption moving forward, just like he said would happen. And guys, it happened thousands of years ago. It has moved through every generation on every continent, in cities and towns and countryside. It's happening right now, and it will continue to happen in the future. As Jesus assembles us into this spiritual house, we are a local gathering, an ecclesia, a gospel outpost placed right here in Winter Garden, Florida, a small part of what God is doing globally and will continue to do in the years to come. Now, I'm not sure where you're at with that. When you hear about the local church being birthed and how it's made its way through generations and how it's going to continue, I'm not sure how that hits you, but I got to tell you where I'm at. When I hear about the local church and when I think about the local church and I think about all that it is meant to be, I am captivated by it. I remember sitting in a conference in this large auditorium and listening to leader after leader after leader talk about the importance of the local church, how the church will bring the redemptive plan of God to bear on this generation. And I remember listening to leader after leader share that. And I remember just sitting there in my seat and I'm like, man, if you're doing that, if that is indeed true, then whatever role I can play in that, I want in. I want in on that. I'll give my life to that. And I've been doing that ever since 1992. And Lord willing, I will do it until I take my last breath on this side of eternity. Because I got to tell you guys, there is nothing like the local church. Nothing. Nothing even comes close to what God does in and through us to make his plan known. And I love the local church. And that's what I love about this picture that Peter paints in chapter 2, verse 5, where he talks about this spiritual house that God is assembling, where people are coming together and they're growing in their understanding of their Heavenly Father. They're growing in relationship with each other. And then we're inviting other people into the journey so that what actually happens is exactly what Jesus said would happen. I mean, this is going on right here. Man, I'm fascinated by this. I mean, I'm fascinated by the fact that you and I could grow in our discipleship. And we could grow in the understanding of God, and we could reach out to people who are far from God and invite them into this space. I'm fascinated by the idea of us connecting with each other in biblical community, that I would know you and you would know me, and we would celebrate what needs to be celebrated and walk with each other in hard times. I love the fact that we can come together and we can worship and stand in awe of God, and that we can serve, and when servants who are serving and leaders are leading and people who are behind the scenes are doing their thing and people who are up front doing their thing and everybody in between, that the local church would prevail. Man, that's a thing of beauty. And that God is building this spiritual house, bringing his people together, constantly unfolding his story through the local churches is unbelievable. It's awesome. It's breathtaking. But something has happened in 2019, right? Here we sit in 2019, and there's kind of this aversion to commitment, right? There's an aversion to that I would call it committophobia. right? And you're like, I've never heard that. Well, it's because I just made it up. You know, that's how creative I am, right? It's comitophobia. Feel free to use it and just give me credit for it. Comitophobia, what is that? I just don't want to commit to anything. I want to have my options out there. I want to be careful with what I'm committing myself to. And our culture has just kind of moved into this space where we just kind of shove commitment off to the side. Because let me take you down just a little bit of memory lane. Do you guys remember the day when you actually had to sign your name on the dotted line and actually stay in a cell phone plan for 2 years? You remember that? Like you would just get stuck in this cell phone plan with your crummy little Nokia phone, and you're just like, why do I have this? It doesn't even work half the time. And after 2 years, you're just like, I can't wait to give it up. Even though what you were switching to may cost more, you just wanted to change, you know? Or how many of you remember this, signing your name on the dotted line for a gym membership that lasted a year? Even though you knew you were only in it for 2 weeks, like you were committed, like you were like, I'm only in this for 2 weeks. Like, well, do you have the 2 week plan? I'm just gonna get in shape real quick and then call it good. You know, like, you remember that? Yet nowhere in our wildest dreams did we ever think you could pay this small initiation fee and then go month to month. Unheard of. That was crazy to think of that. Not only that, but now, like, I mean, I've got, a little while ago I had Hulu. I just resubscribed to it. But when I canceled my Hulu subscription, they're like, sorry to see you go. Have a month free on us. And I'm like, I don't mind if I do. You know, like, what a great idea. You know, and it's like, but then I go to again, and they're like, well, you know, you can put your subscription on hold. You know, and that's like, this is crazy. It's like all these options and stuff. I mean, we live in a day where we are so centered on the consumer, and consumer-oriented thinking has so pervaded our thought that it has found its way into the church. It has found its way into the church. And a byproduct of that consumer-oriented mentality finding its way into the church has now caused us to adopt this way of thinking where we say and think often that church is something that we do for an hour or so on Sunday. Or maybe we drive by it with some friends and we're like, oh, yeah, that's where I go to church. That's where I go to church. But imagine if that kind of thinking, how we often relate with the church, actually made its way into other parts of our life. What if we approached life like that? I remember about 5 years ago when we moved to Central Florida, it was like, where are we going to be? Where do we need to find a place to live? And so we found this little neighborhood that we really liked, and there was a house for rent in this little neighborhood. And so we got the house and then moved all of our stuff in, and what we thought we liked about the neighborhood, it actually came true. We liked the neighbors that we encountered, went to the bus stop, met some new friends. It was great. The kids' schools were great. We were in close proximity to stuff. And so it was a good 2 years. But then the time came that we could actually buy a house. And so we were hoping that there would be something in this neighborhood, but nothing was for sale. And so we looked in some neighborhoods that were close by because we wanted to be fairly close to where we already were because we liked it there. And so we looked at some other houses, and then boom, it happened. A house came for sale in our neighborhood. And we're like, ho-ho! Contacted our real estate agent. We said, hey, look at this. Can we get in there? Everything worked out. And we ended up going through all the due diligence, home inspections, everything looked good. And we're like, this is the house. It's it. Made the offer. They accepted it. And then we showed up at the closing. And we're signing all those papers at closing. You know, you got this pile of papers, small book, signing your name, you know, giving away your firstborn, the whole deal. Remember that box where you hit it? And you're like, I'm paying how much for this? You know, and you sign it off, you push the papers to the other side of the table, and then what do? They give you the keys. You are now a proud owner of some sand in the southeast part of the United States with some drywall and some wood and some shingles, and it's yours. You can now go and enjoy your home. Now, how weird would it have been if we would have done this? We would have gotten those keys. I get in the car with my wife. We go pick up the kids from the grandparents, and we go and we drive by the house.
But we don't actually take those keys and unlock the door and go into the house. We don't go into the house and then start painting and hanging drapes and unleashing our inner HGTV. Like, we did not do that. We didn't put up shiplap. I don't even know what that is, but I hear it all the time. And so it's something you're supposed to do, but we didn't do that. We didn't put up our bed to spend the night in our new house. And we didn't make moves to celebrate birthdays there. We didn't make moves to celebrate holidays there. We didn't have that obligatory, you know, bribery lunch where we feed people pizza to help us move our stuff in, because we didn't move our stuff in. We didn't go there. We didn't have that. And all we do now is we get in the car, load up the kids, maybe have some friends with us and say, oh, well, there's that house that we own, but we don't live there. How weird would that be? That'd be super weird, right? For those of you who know me and my family, if you're friends with us and you know us, you'd kind of be like, I don't think we can hang out with the Hollins anymore. They're odd. They don't do what's normal. Like, they're supposed to move into the house. That's what you do. That's what you do. And yet, as strange as that would be, as strange as that would be, that's how many people treat the church. That's how we treat the church. For many in our world, we've whittled it down to an hour or so on a Sunday, something that we drive by and point that that's where we go. And if we have settled into that route, can I be the first one to stand in line and say, if that is what you have settled for, then you are missing out on something transformational. You're missing out on something transformational. Now, hear my heart on this one, okay? Because I you may be going down this road. It's like, I see the vibe of this series. I see where this is going, Dave. This is about making sure that we come here more now, okay? Like, I see where you're going with that. Like, you just want there to be more people in the seats so we can have the sold-out venue. Are you guys going to start taking attendance or something? You know, is that how this is going to roll from here on out? No. No. That has never been our heart at Mosaic. It currently is not, and it never will be. That is not what we're about. It's not about the whole gathering and how many people we can pack into one gathering. But rather, what would it be like if you and I could actually switch gears? Move away from that kind of thinking, because that has no gospel-centeredness to it at all, but rather we became a people and imagined what it would look like if we embraced the idea of actually being the spiritual house that God is building. That we would actually come together and recognize that you and you and you and me and all of us together, as God builds us up together, and what he is doing here with us together and inviting us into in this redemptive space, imagine what it would look like if we adopted the way of thinking that as a spiritual house that he is building, that we are a priesthood to live out sacrificially what it looks like to follow him and to invite others into that journey, that they too could experience what we experience. What would it look like if we adopted that way of thinking? How would that change things? What is that supposed to look like? How would that flow? Well, there's a picture of that in Acts chapter 2. And I would ask you this. Don't go there. Don't go there. I want you to just listen, okay? If you're new here, this is going to be, if you're new to the story of God, then I just want you to hear Acts chapter 2 and what I'm about to read. And just look at the beauty of what God had built there. And then if you are not new to the story, and you've read this before, you're like, oh, I know this verse. I love this. This is great. Here's what I would ask you to do. Don't get lost in the familiarity of this. Oh, I've heard that, know that, I could quote that. But rather, as the words are being read, imagine you are there. You are in that space, and that is part of the story that God is writing around you and how that would change everything. Acts 2, starting in verse 42, and they being the early followers of Jesus, devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common, and they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. That is exactly what Jesus said would happen. I will build my church. I will build you up into a spiritual house. This is exactly what is going on. This is an amazing section of verses. I mean, could you imagine what it would look like if hundreds upon hundreds of us, men, women, and children across the hallway, just caught a vision for what this could look like, and that we would actually bail on the status quo that our culture is saying, go live this way, create margin in your life so that you can do these things, that we would bail out on the status quo and actually become a people that kind of chuck all of that life agenda aside, and we say, all right, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to focus my attention and affection on something else. What if we actually prayed this? God, I want to commit myself to you and your work and what you're accomplishing through the local church. That's what I want. That we've heard some words from 1 Peter chapter 2 that talked about you building up a spiritual house. Matthew 16, where it talked about you building your church and the gates of hell would not prevail against it. And then Acts chapter 2, now we see that and we're like, wow, look at what you did in this group of people who were sold out to you and your ways so that your redemptive plan would unfold in that city and that they would scatter from there and it would replicate over and over again. God, if that's what you're doing to build your local church, I want in. What if we prayed that? Have you ever prayed anything like that? Because you may know that and go, yeah, I'll do that. But what does it look like to actually take the step and pray? God, this is what I want. This is what I want to be in on what you are building. Could you imagine what would happen in our midst if by the hundreds and hundreds that? What if we awaken to the reality that God is calling us in to be devoted to the scriptures, the Bible, to grow as a follower of His, just like they did back in Acts chapter 2, where they gathered together and they were devoted to the apostles' teaching? What would it look like if you and I then responded with devotion to live in community, biblical community, where you are walking with people and they know you and you know them. You know what trips them up. They know what trips you up, and you can walk together, pray for each other, support each other, love each other, serve each other. What would that look like? I'm not talking about popping in and out of a gathering. I'm talking about life with people. What would it look like if you and I then were devoted to like breaking bread together? We just read in Acts chapter 2 that they gathered together and they shared meals together. They created margin in their life so that they could spend time getting to know people and laughing together and having good food and drink together. And instead of just, you know, revving the RPMs and going crazy for who knows what. Like, they created time for relationship, to encourage each other and bless each other. And then also breaking bread was just reminding them that when they would gather together in the houses, they would be remembering all that Jesus had done. They broke bread and they would take that unleavened bread and recognize that it was God that sent Jesus, and Jesus then gave his life and hung on a cross, and it was his body that was broken. And then the wine was his blood that was spilled, and they would remember that and remember all that Jesus had done for them. And until he returned, they were going to continue to do the same. And what would it like? What would it be like if they were devoted to diving in deeper to prayer? Right, so that we would be those people. And that's partly why we have really wanted to move deeper into that here in 2019 here at Mosaic. We have moved into this place of prayer where we recognize that spiritual discipline is something that we want to thrive here. And so we've created spaces on weekends where we have kind of pushed everything else aside and said, let's just connect with our Heavenly Father. And so last weekend is what we did that. We prayed for the persecuted church worldwide. We prayed for people who were going through it here. And then we had some one-on-one time with God where we asked the Spirit of God to just reveal to us what He wants to show us in regards to distractions and idols and addictions. And then we confessed those things, and then we repented of them. A churchy word where it was like, I had my focus on this, and so I'm repenting, I'm turning away from that, doing a 180, and now my full affection and attention is on You, Jesus. And then we're learning to walk in freedom and life that He leads us in. And they were selling stuff. And they were taking care of each other. And the old them was fading into the distance. And then the Spirit of God was moving in them and through them and accomplishing this great work called building the local gathering. And guys, thousands upon thousands of people wanted in on that. They wanted in on that. And that has been going on for the last 2,000 years in similar fashion in cities and towns and countryside and every continent ever since that happened until today. And it's still going on today, and it will continue to go on because it's exactly what Jesus said would happen. He's building His church. He's building us up into a spiritual house. It is going on. And it's not just going on in spaces where we're like, I don't know anything about like what's going on in that continent or that. Like, it's not in just on these far off places. It's happening right here at Mosaic. And I want to share a story with you about a young adult. She's named Ronnie McCoy. Now, Ronnie was invited by a friend, had some spiritual interest, and she ended up coming here, engaged in the worship, was part of the unpacking of Scripture and was transformed by that, ended up getting baptized here, and then she decided, now I want to get in on this. I want to serve. I want to engage in what God is doing here at Mosaic, and so stepped onto the Mosaic kids team, and then the summer team specifically, and helped out with VBS. And she had this little crew of people there, and she was walking with them and doing exactly the Acts 2 stuff. They ate together, had little snacks together, laughed together, they worshiped together, they talked about spiritual things together. She just kind of led them around. They would listen to the teaching, talk about it, like everywhere you go, man. Spend 3.5 hours for 5 days, 3.5 hours each day for 5 days, just pouring into these kids, loving these kids, serving these kids, and they were forever changed because of her investment. And then at Friday, it was all over, kind of just, all right, guys, we'll see you later. And then a letter came in from one of the parents of the little kids that was in Ronnie's group, and here's what it said. Ronnie was an incredible influence and really bonded with my daughter Lauren and made her feel special and loved, which is so important for her as a tween with so many influences surrounding her. I pray that they can maintain that relationship over the years and that all three of my kids can become more involved in the Mosaic family. Ronnie, thank you again for all your hard work and devotion to the children's ministry at Mosaic. You are making a difference. That's it. The church is continuing. God is building His spiritual house. It's happening right there in our midst. And here's what's so cool is that when Ronnie came here, she felt like this was home, and then she made it her home. She made it her home. She got involved. She started serving, spent her time and energy digging in, and now is involved at deep levels. And no longer is this the church she attends. This is her church. This is her church. And I know that that story's not unique. Like, it's not like that's the only thing happening in our space. There are other stories that could be shared, and many of you have experienced life change and transformation right here. You are different because exactly what Peter wrote about, that God's continuing to build His spiritual house. You're being transformed right now. Everybody sees it. You see it. Your friends see it. Your family sees it. Coworkers see it. Neighbors see it. You are being transformed because God is doing His work. And just like you and I move into homes and we build memories there, And then we look back on those times that we have spent creating those memories, and we see the grace and the goodness and the faithfulness of God. Guys, we want that for you here at Mosaic. We want this to be your home. We want you to be plugged into missional community life. We want you to have relationship with people where they know you and you know them, and you're able to celebrate the things in life that need to be celebrated. And when things are going rough, you're able to stand by those people and you love and serve and bring them meals and pray for them and watch their kids and take care of things. We need people like that. We want you to have those kinds of memories. We want you to have a memory where you're like, man, I used to come here and I didn't really know anybody, but then I stepped onto a ministry team and I began serving, and now I have all these connections with this team that I'm with, and I've got friends there. I look forward to going there because I get to see my people. We want the story where you guys are praying for and investing in relationships, and then you invite them to come to gatherings and they would sit with you right where you are, and they would engage in worship, and then they would respond to what God reveals through his word as it is unpacked, and that their lives would change. And we want you to be able to sit up here in these baptismals and baptize your friends. We want that story to play out for you. We want you to connect with people as you go on Mission Serve. We love hearing stories and want to hear more stories of kids bringing their little sheet home from Mosaic Kids. And they're like, hey, Mom, Dad, this is what I learned, you know, in Mosaic Kids today. And the conversation continues and discipleship happens. We love hearing stories of students going up to the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, and, you know, hanging out together and growing in relationship with each other and coming back changed because they encountered God and they had deeper relationships with others, and their life is forever different now. Guys, we don't want Mosaic to just be the church that you attend. We want this to become your home. We invite you to make this your home. Now, you may say, I don't know, I'm just checking this out. Hey, that's okay. There are other places in our city where they preach the gospel. They're getting to know their Heavenly Father better. They're growing in relationship with each other, and they're gathering together and inviting other people in to make much of Jesus. I mean, we recognize we're not the only game in town. And so if you want to find another place, that's okay. It's not so much like us versus them. It's us together called to be a spiritual house in our city, and that location over there will accomplish things, and that location over there will accomplish things, and things will happen here as well. But what we want for you is to plug into a place and then begin calling that home, because here's what's going to happen, guys. Someday soon, we're going to be on the other side of eternity, and we're going to be just in glory, hanging out with the other people who are followers of Jesus. No separation between us and our amazing God. And we're going to be on the other side of glory, and we can swap stories and share amazing ways how God used this place, this spiritual house. And we will be able to celebrate and thank God for how he provided for us through his bride called the church. I'm telling you guys, there's nothing like it on the planet. It's worth your life. It's worth it. Make this your home. Let's pray. God, thank you so much that we can come to a place like this, and we can be reminded yet again of your goodness and your faithfulness and the way that you have worked through generations. And as we go back into 1 Peter and we look at how you are building a spiritual house, God, explore what Matthew chapter 16 said, where you were going to build your church and the gates of hell would not prevail against it. And then see this beautiful picture in Acts chapter 2 of the people of God connecting and growing and changing and making your redemptive story known. God, that's just inspiring. And so would you do something in us to draw us to a place where we would give it all for the sake of your church in this generation, that your name would be known, that your manifest wisdom would be made known to our generation. through us, your gathered people, the ecclesia, the spiritual house called Mosaic. So for those of us who are newer to the story, we don't understand quite what that means. Would you just help us to get to that place? Help us to understand what that looks like. And would you give us the courage and boldness to carry that out? And for those of us who have been walking with you for a long time, and we're convinced already, and we've already made this our home, and we're already entrenched, God, would you just push it deeper and make it more real and more transformative? And would you do something unmistakable in our midst as that happens? So, God, you've given us a clear path, and we just want to be about the things that matter most to you. And so would you help us to know what part we should play in that? And would we just go all in for that? And it may it be for your sake and for your glory, Jesus. Nothing else. And we thank you for involving us in that plan. And we thank you that you're going to do amazing things in and through us in the days to come. So we look to you, the author and perfecter of our faith, the one who is calling us to follow now. So may we follow well, and would you just give us the spiritual horsepower to pull that off? Because in and of ourselves, we just don't have it. We don't want to change. We don't like to change. We can't change on our own, but by following you and the Spirit empowering us, we can track with you and be forever changed. So may that be true in this place, and may we make much of you, Jesus. Jesus.